From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Over the last 15 years, Wisconsin's 32nd state Senate race has traditionally been one of the tightest and most contentious races voters in western Wisconsin experience. This year, the race is magnified by the fact that the district was the focus of the first recall contest in the summer of 2011. Now, Democratic State Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse, who defeated Republican Dan Capenghi last year, is facing her own challenge from Republican Bill Feehan of La Crosse. Before winning the Senate seat, Schilling represented the city of La Crosse in the state assembly for 10 years. Feehan is a former La Crosse County board member, has been active in the La Crosse County Republican Party, and is a business owner. The winner of this race will represent all of La Crosse, Vernon, and Crawford counties, and part of Monroe County for the next 4 years. UW La Crosse held this debate October 23rd. The candidates were each allowed an opening statement and 1.5 minutes to answer each question from a panel of reporters and the audience. The moderator is UW La Crosse political science professor Joe Heim.
The candidates for the 32nd State Senate District are is incumbent Democrat Jennifer Schilling. On my left and your right is her challenger Bill Feehan. We flipped the coin and Bill is going to go first, and we reverse the order in concluding remarks. So, Bill, go right ahead.
Well, it's great to be here tonight. My name is Bill Feehan, and my wife, Sue Colby Feehan, and I operate Sue Colby Salon and Day Spa and the Salon Professional Academy. For the last 18 years, I've also worked as a manufacturer's rep in the food industry, and for the last 2 years, I served on our county board. And we understand what it takes to create a small business and to create jobs for people. And these have been some very challenging times over the last few years, with one of the worst recessions in our country's history. My opponent has consistently voted against the interest of small businesses. In 2008, she received a 0% rating from the State Small Business Association, the NFIB. And in 2010, she had a 6% rating from the State Chamber of Commerce. Last year, she received a 17% rating from the NFIB. And I'm proud to have the endorsement of our state small business organization, the National Federation of Independent Business. I've traveled all over this district and I've met people who are hurting, people who don't have jobs, who have been forced to liquidate their retirements. In some conditions, they've had their homes foreclosed upon. So we need to create jobs for these people. My opponent says that she's ready to bring a bipartisan spirit to Madison. But last year, she ran in a very divisive recall election against our state Senator Dan Capenghi. And in June of this year, she was campaigning in another recall against Senator Terry Moulton in Eau Claire. Last week, her campaign set out vile mailings that grossly distorted an event that happened over 12 years ago, and they're patently false. I ask, is this the bipartisanship she wishes to bring to Madison? My vision for our state is we need to have more pro-growth policies to get the economy going, to create jobs for people. And when we do this, we'll lift people off government support programs like Badger Care and make them taxpayers. This is how we will ensure that we avoid the kind of budget turmoil that's torn apart our state in the last couple of years.
Well, good evening. I would like to thank the sponsors of tonight's debate for hosting this opportunity to hear from those of us seeking public office on our positions, our visions for our community and the state of Wisconsin as we work to move Wisconsin forward. During my time representing Western Wisconsin in the legislature, I have been committed to standing up for working families, to strengthening the middle class, to ensuring our children have the best educational opportunities available, and to protecting our seniors. As we continue to struggle with the effects of the worst economic recession since the Great Depression, job training, workforce development continue to be my top priorities. We need to be encouraging public-private partnerships, investing in our technical colleges and our university systems, supporting apprenticeship programs to help workers gain the necessary skills and to help employers find the right workers with the right fit. Worker training and job creation go hand in hand. We have to be committed to both in order to get our economy moving again. Working with other regional legislators, we've expanded the successful program of Badger Care to ensure that every child has access to health insurance in this state. We have established Family Care to provide a community-based option for frail and disabled individuals who need long-term support. And I was an early supporter of Senior Care, a popular program that helps low-income seniors afford their medications and their prescriptions. Access to health care is critical for ensuring all Wisconsin residents are not just healthy, but financially secure as well. I have also been and will always be committed to being a strong advocate for our public education system. As a mother of two young boys, I know investing in our public education system needs to be part of our strategy for making Wisconsin competitive in the 21st century economy. Every child should have access to a top-notch education and opportunity to pursue a post-high school degree, whether that child grows up in Hillsboro or Holman, Waseca or Wilton, or any other community in our state. Job training, workforce development, and access to quality health care and a strong public education system have always been my priorities as your state legislator. I understand the importance of reaching across the political aisle, working in a bipartisan manner to get things done, and I will continue to work with my legislative colleagues to heal our political wounds and embrace the collaboration and the cooperation that we value here in Western Wisconsin. The challenges are many, but the opportunities are great, and I am confident that together we can find those solutions to move our state forward. Thank you.
Our first question comes from the panel. Chris Hardy, La Crosse Tribune.
Running a campaign involves making decisions about informing the voters. In this race, Jennifer, your campaign made a decision to produce and mail a flyer regarding a police case involving Bill. Can you both explain why or why not this information is relevant to the voters?
Thank you. Well, first of all, violence against women is never acceptable. I don't care if it happened a year ago or 12 years ago. My opponent pled guilty to a charge in this case, and he expects to believe us that he is innocent today. He is trying to portray himself as a 52-year-old victim. Let's not forget who the real victim is. That real victim was a person, was a young woman who was physically assaulted. Last session, we saw an unprecedented attack on access to birth control, cancer screening, women's issues of health, repealing the Pay Enforcement Act, things that have made it even more difficult for domestic violence victims to seek justice. Now, some people may say that those are not important issues. I believe that they are. And I am troubled when I hear my legislative colleagues talk about issues such as some women rape easy, such as Representative Rivard spoke about. I am troubled when a candidate for Congress talks about rape in the terms that a woman can shut down her body and not become pregnant. I am troubled when Senator Grothman talks about single parents, single women are a higher risk to child abuse and neglect as a single mom. There is a disconnect on these issues, on women's issues and gender issues in this state. And I believe that the voters deserve to know that. And my opponent, his words speak for themselves. His character speaks for itself. We both have records, and I am proud of my history of standing up for women and children in this state, for their health, for their welfare, and for their safety. And I will continue to do that.
Thank you, Jen. Bill?
Well, the thing that I'll start by saying is that the charge of battery was dismissed. And so Senator Schilling seeks to put me on trial for a charge that was dismissed 12 years ago by the district attorney. And nobody really knows what happened that night except for me and the woman who was involved. But I can tell you that the district attorney would not have dropped that charge if there wasn't mitigating evidence. And I've said from the start that what was described in that police report was not accurate. That was not what happened that night. So I think it's sad that politics has descended to this level in our community. Jennifer Schilling has a record, and I'm campaigning to tell people what that record is. And I have a vision for how we're going to get this economy growing and put people back to work. That's what I intend to talk about. And I'll point out that I've been happily married for 8 years. We have a great marriage. We've built two successful businesses together and raised a family. And I think to take an unfortunate event that happened over a decade ago and try and use that for political gain is not in the spirit of Western Wisconsin.
Thank you, Bill. First question comes from our panel, Chris Hardy. Oh, I'm sorry. Ellen Rossborough.
Okay. To take this to a different plane, what is your position on a woman's right to make her own decisions on health care? Specifically, some of the things happening now at the national level are talking insurance, but what is your position on her right to make her own decisions on health care?
Can you clarify your question? Are you asking about abortion?
Nope, health care.
Well, I think that all of us deserve the freedom to choose the health care that we pursue, and that's why I'm opposed to the Affordable Care Act. I don't think that people in Washington, D.C. should be choosing the type of health insurance we have or what things that are covered. I favor Governor Romney's approach of block granting Medicare and Medicaid back to the states so that we can decide in Wisconsin how we want to provide health insurance. And I think that when we do this, we open up the opportunity for innovation. And one innovation that I've suggested involves Badger Care. We've seen this as employers. I've talked to employers all around the district who see this. But the current program traps people in a cycle of dependency, because if they literally make $1 too much, they can lose hundreds or even $1,000 or more in benefits. So my common sense reform is to stair-step the benefit, to give those people an incentive to work more hours, to take a promotion, to take a raise, and to become self-sufficient. So I think that's an example of how, when we allow the states to innovate and to decide how to use these programs, we can find better ways of doing it. The other thing that I recently learned about is, I've talked to many people in the health industry who talk about the problems with people coming into emergency services. One of our local hospitals has a new best practice. What they do is they have a triage desk, so they can either direct the person to emergency, urgent care, or to schedule a doctor's appointment. That can save us thousands of dollars. So that's the kind of innovation that I favor.
Jen?
Isn't that interesting that you pose a question on women's health care and the first thing that comes to my opponent's mind is abortion? That's the disconnect that I am talking about. There is so much more to women's health care than abortion, Mr. Feehan. We're talking about access to cancer screenings, mammograms, birth control. I believe that a woman has the right to access those needs for her health care. If it's mental health care, if it's dealing with those issues, and this legislative session, as I had mentioned, we have seen an unprecedented attack. We have seen doctors being inserted into telling women what they can and cannot know when they come in for a procedure. The control of the state Senate could come down to this seat. This could be the 17th seat. 17th vote, and my opponent could be that deciding factor on issues affecting women's health care. That is troubling, that the first thing that came to his mind was that procedure, because as we need to make sure that women have access to health care and clinics across this state, rural women, those are important services that we need to fund and that we need to continue to support programs like the Well Woman Project here in Wisconsin. That women deserve to have access to health care, and we should not be encroaching on their ability to make decisions about themselves and their bodies.
Okay, next question comes from
Rebuttal, Mike. Please.
Oh.
Rebuttal?
Go ahead.
I just like to say that I don't separate people into groups. When I think about providing great health care to people in Wisconsin, I don't separate it into men and women. We need a health care system that supports everybody, that serves the needs of everybody. So I don't understand, you criticized my question about whether it was a question related to abortion. I'm not in favor of taxpayer funding of abortion, and you even alluded to that in your closing. So I'm in favor of a great healthcare system for all of our citizens.
Okay, next question comes from Mike Thompson, WKBT.
Well, one of the biggest burdens for people in this state is property taxes. Here in La Crosse, we pay some of the highest in the state. What do you feel can be done to bring real relief for property owners?
Thank you. La Crosse is very unique. As you look at the makeup of our tax base, more than half of our property in the city of La Crosse is tax exempt. So putting that unfair burden on the homeowners here in the La Crosse area. We see the demographics of La Crosse as becoming older and becoming poorer, and we are putting that property tax burden on them because of the current formula of property tax exemptions. I have supported groups, if they're nonprofit groups, who want to participate in the payment in lieu of taxes, so that while they are tax exempt, they put forward a goodwill gesture to the community to pay for those fire services, water services, sewer services. While they wouldn't have to, there's a formula that is made, but they voluntarily agreed to do that. And I think that that is one way to offset some of the high property taxes that we see here in our community. But we certainly need to look at how we are funding our schools in this state. And the property tax is the most regressive way to do that. And one of the frustrations that I have in the years I've served in the legislature is that we have not been able to get our arms around that Herculean task of how we fairly fund our schools in this state. Like I said, property taxes is the least regressive way to do it. And if we are going to look at reforming shared revenue, the formula of how we are giving money from the states to our local units of government and cities, we need to factor in communities such as La Crosse that have a very high tax exempt rate as we do.
Okay, Bill?
Well, what initially prompted me to run for public office was receiving an 18% increase in my property taxes in 1 year, and then 2 years later, receiving a 20% increase. And I turned to my wife and I said, they're going to tax us out of our house. So I went door to door and talked to my neighbors, and what I learned from them was that they agreed. Our government was spending too much money, and our taxes were too high. And looking at the budgets of La Crosse County, what we see is that over the last 15 years, our property taxes have increased on average about 6% a year. That is at least twice as fast as wages have been increasing. And so as I was out campaigning and talking to people, you know, I talked to a lot of people that were on Social Security who were afraid they were going to be taxed out of their homes. So there has to be some kind of a balance between the increase in cost of government and people's ability to pay for it. And what I can tell you as well from my experience in our county government is that there are ways that we can find savings. And one of the ways we can save money is to hold the line on increasing wages and benefits of public employees during recessions. In 2008, 9, and 10, our county workers received on average a 3.5% annual increase in wages and benefits. In 2010, that was $1.75 million. It was the entire increase in our property taxes. So I think there needs to be some fairness in terms of what's happening with our public employees' wages and benefits and what taxpayers can afford.
Okay, next question goes to Bill. It comes from Pete Zavakis at WXOW.
Yeah, a lot of talk now, sorry, new to these mics. A lot of talk on the presidential race from both sides about small business, a lot of talk from our governor about small business, both during the recall and since he defeated the recall. How do you both define small business? And do you think government has a duty to help small businesses during a tough economy? If so, how?
Well, I believe that what government has to do is create an environment under which businesses can succeed. And when taxes are continually rising and we see increasing fees and at the same time ever new regulations and compliance costs with those regulations, government can either make things better or they can make things more difficult. And when we see those kinds of increases in taxes and fees and regulations, it hinders businesses from growing. And I think we have a real problem when 4 out of 5 businesses in this country fail in the first 5 years. So it's creating the right environment. Wisconsin, according to the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance last week, was 9th in the United States in tax burden last year. And so we have to look for ways to help small businesses. One common sense reform that I can see is that in visiting a company called Fifth Season Co-op, they they were asked to, if they could have the opportunity to do their own inspections for GAP certifications. Right now, that can only be done by the state. It's a $3,000 cost, and it's a hurdle to small family farmers around Viroqua that are trying to get into the locally grown produce business. So let's allow Fifth Season to do those certifications and remove that hurdle from those small businesses. That's one example of how we can help small business.
Thank you, Bill. Jen?
As I talk to small businesses throughout the 32nd District, they want to be able to hire people. We have a skills gap in this country and in this state that we need to address the skills gap, and we need to better invest in our technical colleges for that pipeline to get people into those training programs, get them in, get them out so they can become productive members of society. We have seen demands in welding and in healthcare, and we need to make sure that we're investing in our technical schools so we have that worker training. We also need to realign what is being, how it's being taught and what's being offered, because the DWD, Department of Workforce Development, their job website has 44,000 openings right now for jobs. Employers, small employers, they want to hire, but they can't find that right skill, that right employee with the training. So we need to do a better job of alignment. We also need to expand access to capital. As I talk to small businesses, that's what they're looking for, that they want that early seed money to help their business grow and take off. And so we need to make sure that we are promoting a responsible venture capital bill in the state to help small businesses grow. We need to be investing in infrastructure, broadband. As I talk to people in the cottage industries here in Western Wisconsin, that they want to be able to compete on the internet and the global market, but they need broadband. They need greater bandwidth to their business, to their home, if it's in rural Crawford County or if it's in La Crosse County, in Monroe County, in Vernon County. So we need to make those infrastructure investments for small business. And finally, we need to look at the Wisconsin Jobs Act, which would allow small businesses to have, Wisconsin businesses to have the first crack at Wisconsin contracts to grow jobs here at home rather than overseas in India or in China.
Okay, thank you, Jen. Next question comes from WLSU, Maureen McCollum.
The Public Service Commission of Wisconsin recently approved the CapEx 2020 High Power Transmission Line project, which will be traveling from the Dakotas into the La Crosse area. American Transmission Company's Badger Cooley line may connect with this traveling to Madison. This concerns some area residents and numerous municipalities and counties in Wisconsin. Some in the 32nd District have either requested more information on the projects or opposed them. And some have called on lawmakers to take a stance. What are your thoughts on these projects?
Sure. Certainly this year I have held 13 different listening sessions throughout the Senate District. And this was one of those issues that I heard about consistently at listening sessions throughout the district. It was a confusing process. It is a confusing process. And so many of these concerned citizens, be it small business, be it farmers, be it local officials, they are concerned about what the impact of these lines will be on tourism, on health, on their business, on their productive ag land. And while it is the Public Service Commission that will be determining that route, it is our responsibility, it's my responsibility as an elected official to help facilitate information between the PSC and the utility company as far as looking for questions. And I have written letters asking for information on behalf of several groups who have posed those to my office looking for more information that they could not get while seeking it out from the utility company. We need to make sure that we also are looking at sustainable energy and here in an energy management program here in Wisconsin. In Western Wisconsin, we have a lot of innovation that is happening with the wind farm in Cashton, digesters that are being used on farms for energy, looking at solar power that Organic Valley is using, or the law enforcement center in Vernon County. We are working with local units of government through E3, many different communities that are looking for best practice ideas for their township or their city to see what they can do for energy management. So while we look at those transmission lines, we certainly want to make sure that they have minimal impact on population and productive ag land. We need to have a balanced energy portfolio in the state as well.
Bill?
We need to understand why these huge power lines have become necessary. And the Obama Department of Environmental Protection is trying to shut down coal fire electric plants around the country. And if we're not going to have coal fire electric power that we can generate locally, then we need an infrastructure to transport it from areas like the Great Plains where wind power is produced to a city like Chicago. It's pretty hard to build wind turbines in the city of Chicago. And so I think, renewable energy is a fine thing. And I recently met with the management at Dairyland Power. They've exceeded the state goal of 10%. They now produce 12% of their energy as renewable. But there's still the question of what do we do when the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow? We have to have traditional forms of power generation. So if it's not going to be coal-fired electric, what's it going to be? Is it going to be nuclear? Is it going to be hydroelectric on the Mississippi River? Our national energy policy is trying to move ahead with hydroelectric, and I can tell you the people along the Mississippi River don't like it. They're concerned about the million-plus fish each one of those dams is going to chop up each year. And I would just like to point out that Senator Schilling is postured as the champion to people who are concerned about these power lines. But she voted to empower the PSC in the state assembly. So what I can tell you is we do not have power as a legislator to affect the outcome of this process. But I would be willing to listen to ideas about changing the process.
Thank you, Bill. First question from the audience. With state funding declining and tuition rising, what would you do to fund higher education? It goes to Bill.
Well, like all of the areas of our budget, education was cut in our last biennial budget. In fact, all of the categories except Badger Care were cut. What the governor tried to do and Republicans tried to do was they tried to find a way to minimize the impact of those cuts. And that was why they made the change in the laws to allow a competitive bidding for health insurance. So our local school districts on Alaska saved over $800,000, Westby saved $485,000, Prairie du Chien saved over $900,000. And so those opportunities were there for school districts to help minimize the impact of some of the loss of funding. Education is absolutely one of the top priorities in our state, but until we turn our economy around, until we have more pro-growth policies, put people to work, lift them off the government safety net, and make them taxpayers, we're going to struggle to fund all of our priorities in Wisconsin.
Thank you, Bill. Jen?
I just wanted to clarify, was your question about the university system?
Yes.
That's what I thought, and I don't believe my opponent answered that question. I don't believe he offered any answers about how we fund higher education in this state. Budgets are about priorities. Budgets are about choices. And unfortunately, under both Democratic and Republican governors, we have seen a cut to our university system. We have seen our chancellors have to go out and raise more dollars privately. We have seen here on this campus something that I supported, the Growth, Quality, and Access Plan that allowed for some flexibility so that we could raise tuition with the support of the students who had voted on this and create 100 jobs here on campus so that we could continue with excellent education here, higher education at UW-La Crosse. We are a campus of choice. But you know what? In the legislature, the government, we are responsible to incarcerate, medicate, and educate. And unfortunately, the corrections budget now exceeds the university system's budget. What does that say about priorities? I think we need to make sure that we are investing in our young people through making higher education a priority, making sure that tuition, as tuition increases go up, that financial aid increases keep pace with that as well. And we need to make sure that the student body is diverse and reflects kind of what students will find when they go out into the workforce. So we need to make sure that we've got diversity in our campus. We need to make sure that we are paying the professors and their staff making sure that they are seeing peer compensation as their colleagues are across the state. So we need to make sure that we have a competitive university system and that we are making sure that it's affordable and keeping to recruit those top professors that are here in our system.
Thank you, Jen.
Rebuttal?
Yes, 30 seconds.
Well, I still haven't heard an answer to where the money comes from, so I'd like to know whose taxes will be raised or what other parts of the state budget will be cut to pay for these increases in funding. And I would also point out that Jennifer Schilling supported Governor Doyle's budget that raised taxes over $3 billion. That was her solution to the last shortfall. And I don't think we're going to solve our state's financial problems and return our economy to health by raising taxes.
Next question comes from Chris Hardy, La Crosse Tribune.
I would like to talk about K through 12 funding. The 32nd is a very diverse district and you have many different school districts. Part of the challenge in the 32nd are school districts like DeSoto and Seneca that are really penalized by the current funding formula for K-12. Do you support the current system for funding education, or can the state really find another way to fund K-12 education?
Jen?
Well, as I mentioned in my opening statement, that there are challenges with how we fund our schools in this state. And I support the plan that Superintendent Evers has put forward about fair funding for our school, looking at recognizing that rural schools, that we have an achievement gap in our rural schools. When you talk about achievement gaps, you often think about Milwaukee. But in western Wisconsin and in rural parts of the state, there is an achievement gap with our rural students. They often have higher transportation costs. They have declining enrollment. And it costs the same amount of diesel fuel to put into that school bus if you've got 15 kids on the bus or if you've got 45 kids on the bus. And as we look at the unique challenges that communities like Seneca has, where I was just down there the other night talking to their school board members, that they are property rich and income poor, that we need to take a look at how we are funding schools in our state. And right now it's based on winners, it's winners and losers. And as you represent a district, you run to see that tear off sheet from the Fiscal Bureau to see if your community is a winner under the current funding formula. And if you are, you want to keep the status quo. If you're not, you want to look for reforms. You want to look to see how we can boost the sparsity aid for rural school districts that I've supported in past budgets. So there, we definitely need to look at how we need to have that intestinal fortitude, which we have not had, to take a look at our formula of funding schools, because property taxes, like I've said, is the most regressive way to do it. And we need to get back to funding two-thirds commitment to schools. We have backed away from that in recent budgets, and I think that will help our local schools and property taxpayers if we get back to that two-thirds commitment of funding public education in our state.
Thank you. Phil?
Well, concerning rural schools, there's no question that they have increased costs for transportation, and I don't believe that the current funding formula adequately addresses that. I think that's an opportunity for bipartisan work by our legislators in western Wisconsin and other rural parts of the state. Jennifer again talks about returning to the two-thirds funding formula, but where are we going to find the money to do that? If we don't turn around our economy and put people back to work, how do we get the revenue to pay for those things? She seems critical of the fact that we are now spending more to incarcerate people in Wisconsin than we spend on higher education. But my question is, who would she let out of prison? You know, recently we had some terrible murders that happened in our community here. And I called up our sheriff to find out what do we need to do to ensure that they have the proper resources. And what we need to do is we need to fund more investigators at the state level to pick up these drug cases and pursue them outside the borders of our state. So there are many priorities that we have to be aware of in the future here, and it's not just education.
Jennifer?
We need to look at our corrections budget, and we like to compare ourselves to Minnesota. Similar demographics, but we pay much more, we incarcerate many more people than Minnesota. We could find some cost savings in our corrections budget by doing things like we know who we are afraid of. Who are we mad at? And those folks that we are mad at, we need to make sure that we, at a local level, the county here has offered many pilots, if it's in drug court, OWI court, veterans court, that there are ways that we can reduce recidivism, that we can get to the root problem of some of these issues. But don't tell me that I'm going to be letting people out. My parents were murdered. My parents were murdered. I know that people need to be held accountable and to stay in prison for life. But I'm not going to be letting out rapists and murderers. That is complete malarkey.
Well, who would you let out?
Like I said, let's look at who's going into prison. Let's look at if they've got OWI, if they've got substance abuse issues. We can look at those. And if you served on the La Crosse County Board, I would think that you would know some of these programs that we have here, the justice sanction program, the innovation that we have here in La Crosse County to reduce our corrections costs. There are things that we can do to be smarter on crime. We've tried being tougher on crime, and it's expensive. We can be smarter on crime and be more efficient.
Next question, Ellen Rossborough.
Okay. Mining for fracking sand has become an issue in many communities in this Senate district. What most concerns you about this, and can the state take control of the problems, if any?
Well, I understand there are some people that are concerned about sand mining in Wisconsin, and one thing we need to realize is we've been mining sand in Wisconsin since the 1820s, and this is one of the bright spots in our economy today. We're seeing many people getting jobs, and not long ago I drove by Brickell Brothers in West Salem, and they had a now hiring sign out, and one of the reasons is because of economic development related to sand mining. So what are the concerns? The process works through the township, and then at that level, they have the opportunity to impose fees to make sure that roads are properly cared for. And then we go to the county government, land conservation, working with our state DNR. At the Economic Development Conference in Warrens earlier this year, I listened to Tom Willetz, the man at the DNR who oversees that department. And he said that sand mining is not a threat to our air quality or our groundwater. And so I trust the people at the DNR to make those determinations, and I think that we have adequate regulation in place today to ensure that these types of opportunities are properly regulated. And I'll point out, just recently, Matthew Construction tried to open a quarry near Wilton, and that was turned down at the township level.
Ken?
Well, when I had those 13 listening sessions, this was another one of those issues that people, citizens, were concerned about. My opponent likes to talk about sand mining since the 1820s. That's a different kind of mining than what is talking about the frack mine. That silica sand is different than that kind of mining that has happened since 1820. The frack sand mining has become a boon in western Wisconsin. It is happening very fast. And just over, since July 2012, we have 87 sand operations under construction here in Wisconsin, with another 20 proposed. Local units of government cannot keep up with the permitting that is going on. Local units of government are concerned about the impact it will have on roads, on their infrastructure. People are concerned about health of that silica dust. People are concerned about groundwater, the public health, the tourism dollars, their property values. Much of this is looked at and regulated at the local control, where some counties have comprehensive zoning and others don't. I've supported measures in the legislature that would have notification to property owners when a mine came in and wanted to pull a permit with a local unit of government, that those property owners would be notified so that they could respond rather than reading about it in the paper the next week that suddenly their neighbor had sold off their farm for that. We need to make sure that I wanted to also look at a study that we in Wisconsin, the legislature, we are often reactive in our nature, not proactive. And we should have I'd requested a study to look at sand mining here in this state, because it is an issue that is not going away, and that we will have to deal with these issues from our local units of government on a grassroots effort as we go forward in this state.
You're listening to a special two-hour edition of Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, and a UW La Crosse debate featuring the candidates in Wisconsin's 32nd State Senate District, incumbent Democrat Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse and Republican challenger Bill Feehan of La Crosse.
Next question goes to Jen Schilling, comes from WKBT, Mike Thompson.
Well, during these campaigns, there's always a lot of promises made, not just your campaign, obviously, but the candidate elected tends to fall into party lines with their votes once elected. If elected, what will you do to ensure that you're not just another mouthpiece for your party, and ensure all these voters back here that you're not campaigning on empty promises?
Sure. Well, listening to our constituents is key, rather than following the way of political parties and caucuses in Madison. I have stood up against Governor Doyle on his gas tax, the franchise fee that I went to bat for, against what he had put forward, and worked to find a plan, that an alternative that was acceptable to our local convenience stores. I opposed the $200 million raid of the patient compensation fund in that budget that earlier one of the forums my opponent alluded to the fact that I supported that. I voted no on that budget because of that was not the governor's money. It was the money of doctors who had paid into that patient compensation fund. I opposed the Governor Doyle's decision to raid the auxiliary funds, and I stood up and I found a solution where we mitigated the cuts, especially to UW La Crosse, that we restored $2 million to UWL for their auxiliary program. So I have demonstrated that I am not afraid to stand up to a governor of my own party where I feel he was is mistaken, and that I will respectfully disagree. And I have voted against significant pieces of legislation such as the budget and those issues where I have found it not in the best interest of the of Western Wisconsin and the district that I represent.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, in my service in La Crosse County on the La Crosse County Board, in Governor Walker's budget, there was a proposal that we would eliminate our income maintenance departments in our county government. That's the department that administers food stamps and Badger Care. And I listened to the facts, and to me that didn't make sense. I think people deserve the opportunity to go meet with somebody, a living, breathing human being, when they are in need of those types of services. And I didn't think outsourcing it to a private company was the right result. So I worked with people in our county government, Jason Witt, the head of Health and Human Services, and Steve O'Malley, our county administrator. And I think most people here are probably aware that they're on the other side of the fence from me politically. And we reached out to Senator Dan Kopanky. We scheduled a meeting where Dan came in and met with all those people, about 30 people in the department. Then I went to Madison with the other members of our Health and Human Services Board, and we lobbied our legislators, and we succeeded. We amended the governor's budget. We preserved 85% of those jobs, and we used technology so that people in any one of those income maintenance departments could pick up the phone and help somebody out. So I think it's a good example of how I was willing to stand up to my own party when I thought what they were doing wasn't the right path.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Pete Zavakas, WXOW.
Jen, you came into your seat, obviously, through a recall election. Bill, I know you publicly opposed the recall against the governor. I interviewed you about it several times. I want to hear your take from both of you on, do you think we should change the recall law here in the state? And if so, how would you change it?
Well, yes, I believe that we do need to change the recall law, and that involves a constitutional amendment. That means that it has to pass in two sessions of the legislature in two consecutive years and then be put forward for a referendum. Polling has shown that people clearly, a vast majority of people believe that we need to raise the standard to some kind of criminal or ethical misconduct. And the problem with these recalls is if we do not raise the standard, this will just become another tool in the political playbook of the political parties. I argued as chairman of the Republican Party against the recall of Kathleen Vineout and against recalling any Democrat state senators because I just think it's wrong. It undermines our electoral process. And when Jennifer Schilling ran against Dan Kopanky, only 59,000 people voted in that election. 87 and 88,000 people had voted when Dan was elected previously. So I think that it's in the best interest of our state. And I think when people are concerned about bipartisanship and the tone in our state, these never-ending recall elections just add to that divisive environment. And I think that's why we need to change the recall laws.
Okay. Jen Schilling?
Well, it's interesting, when we were at our chamber breakfast and had a forum, and my opponent was asked what would be the first bill that he would work on. It was recall reform, not jobs and the economy. There he goes again, taking his eye off the ball. The fact is, recall reform does nothing to create jobs in this state, does nothing to help us with the economic recovery of this state. Wisconsin has a very high threshold of recalls. I don't think we will ever again witness a period that we have just survived here in this state with the number of recalls. Changing recall laws to only pertain in case of criminal misconduct would essentially mirror that of our impeachment laws. And I am hesitant to take away citizens' constitutional right to hold their elected officials accountable. One area I would support reform would be the ability of recall candidates to ignore campaign contributions and to raise unlimited sums of money, as former state Senator Dan Kopanky was able to do. It's interesting, my opponent talks about the expense of recall election. As the chair of the Republican Party, he had a front row seat last summer when they put up a fake Democratic candidate against me to put on, who's in the audience here today, to put up a fake candidate, to have that expense of a primary election so that the former senator had more time to raise more money. That is hypocritical when you talk about the expense of recalls, and you had a front row seat putting up the shenanigans of a fake candidate to put on a primary election.
30 seconds, Bill.
Well, that's just a false statement. On the night that our Republican Party decided that they would put up a placeholder candidate, I was at my daughter's high school volleyball tournament game down in Richland Center. So I wasn't part of that process, and I continue to say that the recall process is a bad process. It cost La Crosse County $310,000 for that recall, and I think there's better things we can do with that money, and if elected, I will certainly sign on to a law that reforms recalls.
Okay, next question comes from Maureen McCollum, WLSU.
Throughout southwest Wisconsin, you'll find empty storefronts in downtown areas, especially in rural areas. Do you see this as an issue? And if so, how can the state legislature work to revitalize downtown areas, or is it up to local communities themselves?
I have been a supporter of the Main Street program that was housed in the former Department of Commerce and is now over in Weedick. And the department, that program is a state program that communities apply for technical assistance from the state. Here in La Crosse, many years ago, La Crosse applied to be part of that program, but they were denied. And the officials here and the business owners and stakeholders said, we're gonna roll up our sleeves and we're gonna have our own public-private partnership to revitalize downtown La Crosse. And any downtown is fragile as you see businesses moving in, moving out. But we need to make sure that in these rural and in these urban areas of neighborhood and revitalization that we have a strong emphasis on those storefronts so that businesses can move in, that they have the opportunity through small business development loans, revolving loans through either the city or the county, and working with the state to look for those resources. But sometimes it's that technical information and technical help that's available as well through the state program of Main Street. And I fought against cutting those funds. I fought against defunding the Main Street program because it is such an economic generator for these businesses to have those small businesses coming in, those mom and pop businesses, to have that support. And it helps. It has a ripple effect of a healthy downtown, then branches out to those neighboring neighborhoods and the whole community. And soon you have a residential area that is now looking to rehab old homes. And so certainly looking at some of those programs to help is critical for those small businesses to revitalize our downtowns.
Bill.
Well, earlier my opponent talked about raising new regulations on sand mining operations, and sand mining operations are a good example of economic development in our rural areas. And I am not a fan of creating more and more new government programs to try and address problems with economic development. Economic development gets down to, do our taxes in Wisconsin allow our businesses to compete? Are they able to compete outside the state? Do the regulations allow people to build their businesses and pursue their dreams? Or do we end up in a situation with mining, iron mining, where the current permitting process has a lawsuit built into it? We haven't had an iron mine in Wisconsin in 30 years because of that lawsuit part of the phase. And I would suggest that if we're ever going to fix our economy, we have to develop our natural resources. The labor unions favored that mining permitting process change. So we can create very high-paying jobs by pursuing that kind of economic development, and it's another example of where my opponent voted against simplifying that process so that we could create jobs.
Okay, next question from the audience. Please name one job creation proposal that you would either propose or support. And it goes to Bill.
Well, I would support a bill that helps with the formation of capital. That is a problem with small businesses, and it is an example here in La Crosse County. We have an economic development fund, and I do believe that those types of programs can be helpful to small business. Generally speaking, I favor a more macro approach. I'm interested in seeing our state find ways of lowering taxes and reviewing regulations to make sure they make sense. I believe that those are the actions we have to take to spur our economy.
Thank you. Jen?
I would support a venture capital bill here in this state, a responsible venture capital bill. In the past, we had one that Wisconsin taxpayers got burned on that we need to make sure that we've got appropriate oversight of it and audit and transparency of it. I also would support the Wisconsin Jobs Act that would allow Wisconsin companies to have first crack at state contracts here in Wisconsin. And serving on the Economic Development Committee and in the State Senate, we had many bipartisan bills that came out. Both Democratic and Republican members of that committee authored and had hearings on bills that we supported. One was Senator Wongard's bill that gave tax credits to businesses that hired unemployed people after a certain duration. I supported that. I supported bills that would help returning veterans have seek the skills and training that they need, and then to offer incentives for businesses to hire disabled veterans to be in the workplace. So there are many things that we can do to look at creating jobs here in the state and looking for those opportunities to see real growth in our state.
Okay, thank you. We're now going to move into closing statements of 2 minutes each. Jen goes first, Bill second. Jen?
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for taking the time to attend tonight's debate. All of us are proud to call Wisconsin home, but yet I see the struggles that people are facing just to get by. I saw it during a listening session down in Reedstown when a woman who had lost her job moved to a new community looking for employment to help support her and her special needs son. By boosting our economy through fostering job creation and addressing the skills gap, that is imperative to turning the corner on our economic recovery. I have heard the frustrations from school officials about deep budget cuts, about larger class sizes and inequities in state aid, as I have toured their schools, met with their school board officials from West Salem to Seneca. So investing in our local schools and higher education is vital so that today's students have the necessary skills and training to become tomorrow's workforce, because education is that great equalizer in our society. And finally, I've met with families from across this district who fear losing their health insurance through no fault of their own. They are worried about their children getting sick, their spouse getting injured, and not being able to pay their medical bills. That is why affordable, quality health care is critical for both preventive medicine and also for life-altering diagnosis is made. We in Wisconsin believe in the promise of a better tomorrow. We in Wisconsin can do better. In fact, we must do better. We shouldn't be giving away $2.3 billion in tax breaks to the wealthy corporations at the expense of our schools, our colleges, and our universities. And unlike my opponent, I do not support passing an irresponsible mining bill that jeopardizes our natural resources of clean air, clean water, and flood mitigation protections that would affect homeowners here in Little Cross area. And finally, the residents of the 32nd Senate District, you deserve a state senator who's going to show up for the job day in and day out, not like my opponent who has skipped one-third of his county board meetings and responsibilities. We have serious challenges in front of us, but I know we can overcome them together, because just like we have always done, we will come together. And tonight, I respectfully ask for your vote for the state senate on November 6th.
Thank you, Jen. Bill?
Well, I've traveled all over western Wisconsin and spoken to thousands of people, and what people are most concerned about is growing our economy and creating jobs. And my wife Sue and I are small business people. We know what that's all about. We know what it is to struggle to sit down across from the table with your banker and to have to take out a second mortgage on your house to keep your business alive and protect the jobs of the people that work for you. So I will tell you that I'm proud of my endorsement from our state small business organization, the NFIB. I think that it's a time that people are looking for new leadership, better representation in Madison. They want somebody that's going to down there to strike a new tone. And that's why I've pledged that I will meet with all Republicans and Democrat senators and meet with them and show respect and start a dialogue. Now, that's the way we've always gotten around disagreements at our house, as we sat down and talked about it. So I think it's time that we start talking. I think it's time that we end the divisive recalls. It'll be a long process, but I hope that we'll all agree that we don't want any more recalls. That's not what Western Wisconsin's about. We're better than that. I don't seek to be the senator of a select group of people. I seek to be the senator for all of the people of Western Wisconsin, and to pursue the policies that will engender economic growth and job creation. And when we create those jobs, we'll lift people off of public support programs, and make them taxpayers. That's how we're going to avoid the kind of turmoil that our state's gone through during these last 2 years. I'm Bill Feehan, and I'm humbly asking for your vote on November 6th.
Thank you, Bill. On behalf of UWL and our co-sponsors, I'd like to thank our panelists, Joe and Jeremy Army for helping to organize this event, Legal Women Voters timekeeper Ellen Franz, and especially our two candidates for being here tonight, Senator Schilling and Bill Feehan.
You've been listening to a UW La Crosse hosted debate featuring the candidates in Wisconsin's 32nd Senate District. They include incumbent Democrat Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse and Republican challenger Bill Feehan of La Crosse. The winner of the November 6th election will represent La Crosse, Vernon, and Crawford counties, and part of Monroe County. The moderator was UW La Crosse political science professor Joe Heim. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. Next week on Newsmakers, UWL's Joe Heim and others will be here for a post-election review and an analysis of Tuesday's elections. Please join us.